Scarpia. I'll stop doing that soon, but not quite yet. Bravissimo, thinks Scarpia, as he contemplates the execution of Cavaradossi and, even more important, the taking of Tosca. And that brings us to Act Two, one of the greatest of all Puccini's operatic acts. We begin at the beginning with Scarpia's plan of action and his credo. Please let us read the libretto. The action takes place in the Farnese Palace. Scarpia's room on the upper floor. The table is laid for supper. A large window gives onto the courtyard of the palace. It is night. Scarpia is sitting at the table having supper. From time to time, he interrupts his meal to reflect. He takes a watch from his pocket, and in his restless demeanor, he betrays a feverish anxiety. And he begins in recitative, but of course, no longer will we hear dry recitative since the mid-19th century, since both Verdi and Wagner proved that continuous drama is infinitely more interesting than the old divisions of aria and recitative. We will not hear those divisions any longer. So we should not expect any moment when the orchestra will not be playing in this opera. Tosca is a good decoy. By now my bloodhounds must have sunk their teeth into their two quarries. Tomorrow's dawn will see Angelotti and the handsome Mario hanging on the gallows. He rings a handbell. Scarroni appears. Scarroni is one of his henchmen. Is Tosca in the palace? Scarroni says. A footman has just gone to fetch her. Scarpia, pointing to the window. Open it. The hour is late. From the lower floor, where the Queen of Naples, Maria Carolina, is giving a great entertainment in honor of General Meles, is heard the sound of an orchestra. So as the window is opened, the orchestra has to play kind of like they're in the distance. This is the orchestra of the party going on in a lower floor of the palace. Now, quickly, I have to explain some historical stuff. The Queen of Naples, Maria Carolina, would be an enemy of the French and an enemy of the French Revolution. General Meles is the general that has just been given credit for having defeated the Napoleonic forces and re-liberated the already liberated Rome. It's hard to keep track of who's on what side here. Just suffice to say for now that the French were perceived across the European continent in the days before Napoleon made himself emperor as the liberators who would liberate Europe from the abject power of the absolute monarchs that had ruled for so many hundreds and hundreds of years. So despite the fact that the Italians are controlling Italy right now, those Italians are seen as oppressive because they represent an oppressive monarchical system. Anyway, there's a party going on downstairs celebrating General Meles, who has supposedly defeated the French forces and reinstated the power of Maria Carolina. In any case, Scarpia hears this music and says, the diva is not here yet for the cantata, so clearly she's coming in to sing. And they're filling in with gavottes. So we're going to hear these old gavotte dances being played in the background. And now everything will be parlante, and it's really hip. What we've got in the background is this old dance music, these gavottes played by the orchestra, and everything Scarpia says now will be layered on top, parlante style, of the gavotte. This is something that Verdi showed us all how to do, and any other composer of Italian opera would be a fool, if not quite crazy, not to do the same thing. Scarpia turns to Scarrone. You will wait for Tosca at the entrance and tell her that I expect her when the cantata is over. Or still better, he hurriedly writes a note. You will give her this note. Scarrone goes out. Scarpia returns to the table and pours himself a drink. She will come for the love of her Mario. For love of her Mario, she will submit to my pleasure. And at that moment, we hear, no surprise. We know his pleasure is bad news. The depth of her misery will match the depth of her love. And now we hear Scarpia's Credo, a genuine aria where he lays out who he is, what he is, what he wants, and how he intends to get it. She will come for love of Mario. A forcible conquest has a keener relish than a willing surrender. I find no delight in sighs and sentimental moonlight serenades. I cannot thrum chords on a guitar, nor tell fortunes from flower petals, nor make sheep's eyes or coo like a turtle dove. I have strong desires. I pursue what I desire, glut myself with it, and discard it, turning to a new diversion. God created different beauties and different wines. I wish to savor all I can of what heaven produces. All right, let us listen to this entire opening, and let me point out the following before we do. Note, please, the effortless movement back and forth between recitative, parlante, arioso, and aria, as well as the pastiche, that is the pasting in of this old gavotte in the background while we hear parlante stacked on top of it. After Verdi, all Italian operatic music is continuous, and this continuity is very well wrought in this scene.
Attenderai la posta in sull'entrata. Le dirai ch'io l'aspetto finita la cantata. Questo biglietto e la verrà per amor del suo Mario. Per amor del suo Mario, al piacer mio. Questa violenta che il melliflo consenso io di sospiri e di lattiginose al vero mari poco m'appago non so tra
tu barco me torto
right. Now, I would also point out the effortless lyricism of this passage. However, some of this lyricism, and we can be slightly critical without dissing our friend Puccini too much, this effortless lyricism may be at the expense of character development. What I mean by that is this. Scarpia could certainly have sounded meaner and rottener, like Iago in his Credo in Verdi's Otello, where really the darkness of Iago's character is revealed. That doesn't happen here. Puccini would rather maintain a wonderful, broad, and passionate lyricism. Although I would tell you, by act's end, the repulsive character of Scarpia will be well revealed musically. But these are the kind of things that have put Tosca under fire from critics, that we have a bad guy singing about his lusts and desires, and he doesn't sound all that bad. Because in cases like this, Puccini may very often err on the side of being overly lyric rather than being dramatic. It has been pointed out that grand opera is filled with nasty villains. But even in the company of such sadists as Mephistopheles and Iago, Scarpia is unique, for his sadism is overtly sexual. To make sure we are fully clear that Scarpia is a sexual sadist, Puccini and his librettists have Scarpia say so three times. The first time, he says it here, a forcible conquest has a keener relish than a willing surrender. And later he says to Tosca, your eyes, which darted hatred at me, made my desire all the more fierce. And later than that, he says, how you hate me. This is how I want you. He is not a likable human being. All right. The second part of Act Two, the police report comes in. Scarroni enters and says, Spoletta is here. Spoletta is another one of Scarpia's henchmen. Scarpia, send him in. It's about time. Scarpia sits back down, intent on his supper, interrogates Spoletta without looking at him. Well, my fine fellow, how went the chase? Spoletta, St. Ignatius, help me, please. We followed the trail of the lady. When we arrived at a remote little villa hidden among the thickets, she went in. All right. He's telling Scarpia that they followed Tosca, and Tosca went to Cavaradossi's little villa, and she went inside the villa. What this means is that Tosca has got to know, whatever Cavaradossi's involvement is, what that involvement is, and Tosca might even know where Angelotti is. When we arrived in a remote little villa, hidden among the thickets, she went in, but quite soon came out again alone. Then, with my colleagues, I quickly scaled the garden wall and stormed the house. Scarpia, well done, Spoletta. And Spoletta, we hunted, we ransacked, we ferreted. And Angelotti wasn't to be found. Scarpia, oh, he's mad. You dog, you traitor, you bungling idiot, to the gallows. Spoletta, merciful Jesus, the painter was there. Cavaradossi? He knows where the other's hidden. His every gesture, his every word exhibited such mocking irony that I put him under arrest. Ah, now Scarpia's feeling much better about things. Ha ha, that's better. Spoletta, pointing to the anteroom. He's in there. Scarpia paces up and down thoughtfully. Suddenly he stops. As through the open window, we hear the singers. We know now that Tosca is in the building. Scarpia, struck by an idea, suddenly says to Spoletta, bring in the cavalier and fetch Roberti and the judge of the exchequer. Spoletta and three police agents lead in Cavaradossi. Then enter Roberti, the torturer, the judge of the exchequer with a clerk, and Scarrone. Uh-oh, the torturer is there. Please, let's continue the questioning of Cavaradossi. All of this is done parlante and is done quite brilliantly. Of course, Cavaradossi, a nobleman, is outraged at being hauled in for no particular reason. And that's the first thing he says. This is an outrage, Scarpia, with studied courtesy. Cavalier, please be seated. I want to know. Please sit down. I'll stand, Scarpia says, as you wish. You know that a prisoner escaped today from the Castel San Angelo? Cavaradossi responds, how should I know? Scarpia, Yet it is alleged that you sheltered him in San Andrea, provided him food and clothing. It's a lie, and led him to a farm of yours outside the city. I deny it. What evidence have you? Scarpia, a faithful subject, and Cavaradossi responds, come to the point. Who has accused me? Your spies searched my villa in vain. Scarpia says, proof that he was well hidden. Cavaradossi, mere police suspicion. Spoletta, yes, he laughed at our searches. Cavaradossi responds, and I still laugh. He's filled with bravado. Ha, 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 ha. Scarpia responds, you'll find this no place for laughter. I warn you, enough now. Reply. Irritated and disturbed, he closes the window. He doesn't even want to hear the singers anymore. All right. The interrogation of Cavaradossi turns ugly, and this we will listen to. It is a superb and powerful passage of great action and great impact. Scarpia barks out, where is Angelotti? And Cavaradossi, he is heroic. He's a tenor and a quite dramatic one. I don't know. Scarpia, do you deny having given him food? I do. And the clothes? I deny it. Scarpia, and sheltering him in your villa? And that he is hidden there? I deny everything. Nego, nego! Scarpia, come, Cavalier, reflect. This obstinacy of yours is unwise. Prompt confession could save you much anguish. I advise you to tell me, where is Angelotti? I don't know. Once more and for the last time, where is he? I don't know. Spoletta aside. Now the cords will be tightened, and at this moment, enter Tosca, anxiously. Scarpia says, ah, there she is. Tosca, seeing Cavaradossi, runs to embrace him. Mario, you here? And Cavaradossi says, under his breath, say nothing of what you have seen there, or it will mean my death. So Tosca knows. Tosca knows where Angelotti is, and of course she's been warned to say nothing about it. Cavaradossi, or it will mean my death. Scarpia, Mario Cavaradossi, the judge is waiting to take your deposition. He says to the torturer, first the usual way, afterwards, as I indicate. The judge goes into the torture chamber. The others follow, leaving Tosca and Scarpia alone. Spoletta withdraws to the door at the back of the room. Please, we will listen to the second half of the interrogation from where Scarpia says, where is Angelotti?
Angoscia grande, pronta confessione vi terrò. Io vi consiglio, dite, dove dunque Angelotti?
All right, my friends, the gang's all there. This is what Scarpia has been waiting for. He's got Mario Cavaradossi in a side room, a torture chamber, where the torturer is prepared to take his confession. He's got Tosca in his room with him, and now the machinations begin. Scarpia decides it's time to have a little chat with Tosca. Scarpia says, and now let us have a friendly chat There's no need to feel alarmed, and Tosca, seating herself with affected calm. I'm not alarmed. Now, Scarpia, at first, my friends, is all congeniality, but slowly he begins his interrogation of a clearly frightened Tosca. And even as they chat, Cavaradossi's torture is being prepared in the adjacent room. She hasn't a clue of what's going on. The torture of Cavaradossi I've divided into two parts. I would read the first part now. We will take our break and then come back and read and listen to the second part. Scarpia. Scaroni, what does the cavalier say? Yes, the true ugliness begins. Scaroni appearing in the doorway. He says nothing. Scarpia. Then let us insist. Scaroni goes back inside, shutting the door. Tosca says, this is useless. Scarpia. We shall see, dear lady. Tosca. So to satisfy you, I must tell you lies? Scarpia. No, but the truth could shorten a very painful hour for him. And Tosca is alarmed all of a sudden. A painful hour? What do you mean? What is happening in that room? Yes, she has not been particularly quick on the uptake. She can't believe that this is happening. Scarpia. The law is being enforced. Tosca. Oh, God! How? Scarpia. Bound hand and foot, your lover has round his temples a circlet of steel, which at each denial mercilessly makes blood gush forth. Tosca, it's not true, it's not true, it's a diabolical jest. Have mercy, Scarpia, it lies in your power to save him. Tosca, well then, but stop, stop them. Scarpia, loosen him. Scarone says, entirely? Scarpia says, yes, entirely. He turns to Tosca, and now the truth. Tosca says, let me see him. Scarpia says, no. Tosca says, Mario! She screams his name, and from the closed door, we hear Cavaradossi's voice. Tosca! And Tosca says, are they still torturing you? Cavaradossi's voice, no, have courage. Be silent. I scorn pain. Oh, my goodness, what a stud. Well, we'll see how much pain he can scorn as we move into the second and really brutal part of this scene. Let's take our break, and when we come back, the torture of Cavaradossi and Tosca. Thank you. Welcome back to How to Listen to and Understand Opera. This is our final lecture, Lecture 32, the second of a two-lecture set entitled Verismo, Puccini, and Tosca. All right, we return at really the dramatic crux of this terrifying and brutal second act, the second part of the torture of Cavaradossi, where the torture becomes the torture of Tosca as well. Please, I read from the libretto. Scarpia, and now Tosca, speak out. Tosca says, I know nothing, Scarpia. That test was not enough. Roberti, repeat the treatment. And of course, Roberti is the torturer, and this means more of the same. Tosca, no, stop, Scarpia. Will you speak? Tosca, no, you monster. You are torturing him. You're killing him. Now, these are very dramatic words, my friends. These are terrifying words, and I would point out that despite the brutality of these words, we hear an almost Neapolitan song-like musical substance. Again, we can criticize Puccini for that, but the violence is there, the action is there, the pathos is there. He is simply speaking in a very lyric language. His accusers would call him base and cheap. I call it Puccini. Let's continue, please. Scarpia, that silence of yours is harming him far more. Tosca, you laugh? You laugh at this terrible suffering? Scarpia, Tosca was never more tragic on the stage. Open the doors so that she can hear his cries. Now to drive it home even more, they open the doors to the torture chamber so that now all the noise can come right into the room where Tosca and Scarpia are. Spoletta opens the door, placing himself directly in front of it. Cavaradossi's voice cuts through. I defy you, Scarpia. Harder, harder, Cavaradossi's voice. I defy you, Scarpia. Speak. And Tosca says, what can I say, Scarpia? Come quickly, Tosca. I know nothing. Must I tell lies? And Scarpia again insists. Say where Angelotti is. Speak out now. Where is he hidden? And Tosca reaches a climax of grief. Ah, I cannot bear it. Cease this torment. It's too much to suffer. And at this moment, she sings this impassioned and extremely lyric musical line that goes like this. At the very top of her range, and we feel her pain. It's a climactic moment because we realize that there are truly two people being tortured right now. It's not just Cavaradossi. The emotional and mental pain that Tosca is feeling is bringing her to the breaking point as well. She says, I cannot bear it. And then Cavaradossi's voice cuts through the air. Ah! This agonized scream. Tosca again turns imploringly to Scarpia, who signs to Spoletta to let her approach. She goes to the open door and, terrified at the sight of the dreadful scene, addresses Cavaradossi. So now she's not just hearing him, she's looking at him out there on the rack. Tosca, Mario, will you let me speak? And Cavaradossi, no, no! Tosca, listen, I can bear no more. And Cavaradossi is still strong. Don't be silly. What do you know? What can you say? This is one tough guy, huh? Scarpia, infuriated even more by Cavaradossi's words, shouts at Spoletta, make him quiet! Tosca, what harm have I done to you? She's speaking to Scarpia, of course. It is I whom you are torturing. You are torturing my soul. Yes, it is my soul you are torturing. And the scene has gotten so ugly, my friends, and so rude with Tosca looking at the torturing and Cavaradossi screaming and Scarpia saying, make him quiet, that even Spoletta, who is one of Scarpia's henchmen, mutters a prayer. That's how nasty this is. When the bad guys start getting upset, you know that a lot of ugliness is transpiring. Scarpia goes to the torture chamber and signals for the torture to recommence. Cavaradossi's voice, ah! Tosca, at Cavaradossi's cry, she leaps up and in a stifled voice, hurriedly says to Scarpia, in the well, in the garden. Angelotti is there? Yes. Scarpia, basta, Roberti. Enough, Roberti. Scarone, appearing at the door, he has fainted. Tosca to Scarpia, murderer, I want to see him. So Scarpia says, carry him in. Whoa, I'm just sweating reading this stuff, and I'm not even sitting in the torture chamber myself. Look, Charles Osborne writes of this scene, and now I quote, slowly and inexorably the brutality emerges. It is this scene which is both the most effective and the most sickening in Tosca. As Puccini piles on the agony, Cavaradossi's offstage cries of pain, the nerve-grating orchestral phrases which depict the application of physical torture, Scarpia's cat-and-mouse manner with Tosca, her shrieks of desperation and despair, all combine to increase the tension until Tosca confesses that she can bear no more and reveals Angelotti's whereabouts to Scarpia. Let's listen to this, and as we listen, ask yourselves what other opera or opera composers we have studied thus far could or would write such a scene. Monteverdi's Orfeo, everything so highly stylized and abstracted, never. Opera seria, grand characters, but grand characters being grand. A torturer would imply evil, but never actually conduct it on stage. Opera buffa? No, I can think of no torture scenes offhand in opera buffa. In fact, even as we move through the dramatic operas of the 19th century, one cannot come up with a scene like this, not even in Wagner. No, 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 no. This is verismo. This is the true depiction of the ugly side, the downside, the desperate side of desperate human beings. And Scarpia is a desperately, dastardly human being. We see it, we hear it, we feel it. We are witness to it. Please, torture scene, part 2. So now Tosca and Mario, a tad bit worse for the wear, we might add, are reunited. Cavaradossi is carried in, unconscious, by the police agents, who lay him down on the settee. Tosca runs to him, but so great is her horror at the sight of her lover streaming with blood that she covers her face so as not to see him. Then, ashamed of her weakness, she kneels down beside him, kissing him and weeping. During the course of the following dialogue, which I will not read, Tosca admits to Cavaradossi that she has ratted Angelotti out. And Cavaradossi, who has gone through a bit of stress in the last few minutes himself, is, of course, infuriated. He screams at Tosca as he comes to, "Curses on you!" But with great timing, it is opera after all, Schiaroni, one of the henchmen, runs in, much agitated. "Excellency, terrible news." "Yes, a very good time for a change of subject." Scarpia, "Why this long face?" Scaroni, "News of a defeat." Scarpia, "What defeat? How? Where?" Scaroni, "At Marengo." Scarpia, "Idiot, you've got it wrong." Scaroni, "Bonaparte was victorious." And Scarpia says, "But General Melas." And Sciarrone responds, "No, Melas was routed." And so Melas's victory is not a victory after all. The forces of France, the forces of liberation, have been victorious, and they will undoubtedly soon march on Rome. Cavaradossi lives. He's heard all of this with growing anxiety. In his enthusiasm, he finds the strength to rise, and he confronts Scarpia. Cavaradossi screams out, and I would tell you on a high A, but a sustained high A, that's getting A sharp. Excuse me, even higher than an A sharp. This is very close to the top of the tenor's range. And if a tenor's got a voice that can pull this off, they've got a voice. But I would imagine more than one tenor has crashed and burned on Vittoria, Vittoria, on a high A sharp. And then Cavaradossi continues to sing, "Let the dawn of vengeance appear to strike terror into our foes. Let freedom arise and tyrants be overthrown." Tosca, meanwhile, has a more pragmatic view of all of this, like, "Mario, shut up, please." She holds on to him and tries to calm him down. She says, "Hush, Mario, for my sake." But Cavaradossi will not be refused. "You shall see me rejoice," he says to Scarpia, "for the anguish I have suffered. Let your heart falter, O Scarpia, you butcher." Scarpia is not terribly impressed right now. After all, he still has his police, and Mario is still his prisoner. So Scarpia says, "Bluster and bawl. Hasten to reveal to me the depths of your infamous soul. Go, the gallows await you, half dead as you already are." He shouts to the police, "Take him out of here." Sciarrone and the police agents seize Cavaradossi, and they drag him towards the door. Tosca tries to oppose them with all of her might, clinging on to Mario as he's dragged across the room. Tosca is, of course, crying, "Oh, Mario, Mario, I will go with you." Scarpia, pushing her back into the room, says, "Not you." Let's listen to this extraordinary scene, this proclamation of victory on that high A sharp by Mario Cavaradossi, and the realization that his fate would seem to be sealed, and the only people left in the room after this, again, extraordinary and seemingly climactic scene are Scarpia and Tosca. One climactic moment piled upon the next. It's a brilliant trio. It really is. It's short but extraordinarily dramatic as all three players are involved. Tremendous physical action going on simultaneously. Very effective theater. Very effective opera. All right. A despairing Tosca, her soul and spirit battered and indeed almost broken, begs for Cavaradossi's life. She says to Scarpia, "Save him." Scarpia, "I? No, you." He goes back to the table, sees his interrupted supper, and turns his back, calm and smiling. Now, in Tosca's eyes, it should be settled. The bottom line is, she has confessed. He knows where Angelotti is. So what's this rotten creep holding out for at this point? She has not a clue, but soon she will know. Scarpia says, "My poor supper was interrupted. Why so despondent? Oh, come, lovely lady, sit down here." shall we together seek some way of saving him? So then, be seated. We'll talk it over. Meanwhile, a glass of Spanish wine, a sip will raise your spirits. All right, let the negotiations begin. Tosca, facing Scarpia and looking him right in the eye, says, "Quanto?" How much? Scarpia says, "How much? What's your price?" So it appears that there's some steel in Tosca after all. Scarpia should see this as a bad sign, but he does not. Scarpia says, and this is a wonderful aria, perhaps Scarpia's best aria in the whole opera, "Ah, they call me venal, but I don't sell myself to lovely ladies for mere money. If I have to betray my sworn loyalty, I choose a different payment. I've been waiting for this moment. Love of the diva has long consumed me. But a while ago, I saw you as I had never seen you before. Your tears flowed like lava on my senses, and your eyes, which darted hatred at me, made my desire all the more fierce. When, supple as a leopard, you clung to your lover, ah, in that moment I swore that you should be mine." And he advances on Tosca, and of course, with stunned realization, she suddenly figures out what he wants, and what he wants is her. And she lets out an agonizing cry of, "Ah!" Let's listen to this scene, the beginning of the negotiations.
Quanto?
Quanto?
Il prezzo.
Disgusted, repelled, Tosca realizes nevertheless that she truly has no choice. If Mario is to live, she must trade herself for his life. I move quickly through the intervening material to her famous aria, Tosca's response to this aria of Scarpia's, and that is, "Vici d'arte, I have lived for art." Overcome by grief, Tosca falls on the settee. Scarpia coldly continues to gaze at her, and she says, "Vici d'arte, vici d'amore. I have lived for art. I have lived for love and never harmed a living soul. In secret, I have given aid to as many unfortunates as I have known. Always a true believer, I have offered up my prayers at the holy shrines. Always a true believer, I have laid flowers on the altar. In my hour of tribulation, why, O Lord, why hast thou repaid me thus? I gave jewels for the Madonna's mantle and offered my singing to the starry heavens that they might smile more brightly. In my hour of tribulation, why, O Lord, why hast thou repaid me thus? Now, this is one of Puccini's most famous and deservedly beloved arias. It is broad, lyric, and very prayerful, because she's not even looking at Scarpia at this point. She's praying to her God and asking simply, why? Let's listen to the very opening of this aria. Frankly and sadly, it's all we have time for, and then we will continue. I would point out that this is a desperately beautiful oasis in a sea of otherwise brutal music here in the second act. Vici d'arte. Now, we know if we've seen Tosca that traditionally Tosca sings Vici d'arte from her knees, not standing and not sitting. The story behind that is most interesting. Maria Giarrizza was Puccini's favorite Tosca. It was Giarrizza who started the tradition of singing Vici d'arte from the floor. She claimed in an interview that she gave in 1926 that during a rehearsal, the baritone playing Scarpia accidentally pushed her off the couch, and she did not have time to get up. "Never do it any other way," shouted Puccini from the back of the auditorium. "It was from God," unquote. And indeed, it is. It's a marvelous and dramatic moment. But it doesn't last forever. Reality reintrudes. Scarpia says to her, "Make up your mind." And Tosca says, "Must I kneel and beg for pity? Look, I implore you with clasped hands. See, here I am, defeated, pleading for a single word of mercy." And Scarpia responds, "Tosca, you are too lovely and too enchanting. I yield. The bargain is a poor one. You ask for a life. I ask of you for but a moment." "Well, then," Tosca nods her head in assent. Then, weeping for shame, she buries her head in the cushions of the settee. Tosca says, "But I want him set free at once." And Scarpia says, "A deception will be necessary. I cannot simply let him go. Everyone must believe that the cavalier is dead." He points to Spoletta. "This worthy fellow will arrange it." Tosca, "What assurance have I?" Scarpia says, "The order I shall give him in your presence." "Spoletta, shut the door." Then he says to Spoletta, Scarpia does, "I've changed my mind. The prisoner will be shot. Pay attention. Just as we did with Count Palmieri." Scarpia gazes meaningfully at Spoletta, who nods his head to indicate he has understood Scarpia's intentions. "A firing squad," says Spoletta. "Yes, yes," Scarpia says, "a sham one." as in the case of Palmieri. Is it properly understood? And Spoletta says, yes, yes, just like Palmieri. Wink, 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 wink. Look, does Tosca really suspect nothing at this moment? Is she simply too exhausted to notice the subterfuge? Is she willing to believe anything at this point? Or is she simply not particularly bright? You take your pick, but I think she's simply been worn down and hears only what she wants to hear. She sees only what she's willing to see. Clearly, Scarpia has no intention of allowing Mario to live. In any case, Scarpia says to her, I have kept my promise, and now the final scene of Act Two, the death of Scarpia. Tosca, not yet. I want a safe conduct so that I can flee the state with him. Scarpia says, you want to leave? And Tosca says, yes, for good. Scarpia says, you shall have your way. And at that moment, we hear a tragic, almost ominous theme, which portends the brutality to come. He goes to a desk and begins to write, breaking off to ask Tosca, which road will you take? And Tosca says, the shortest. Civitavecchia? And Tosca responds, si. While Scarpia is writing, Tosca approaches the table and with trembling hand takes the glass of Spanish wine that he poured for her earlier. But as she raises the glass to her lips, she perceives on the table a sharp pointed knife. Yes, yes, it's Scarpia's dinner knife. This is where he was eating his dinner. She casts a rapid glance at Scarpia, who at that moment is busy writing, and with infinite caution succeeds in taking possession of the knife. She hides it behind her, leaning on the table and watching Scarpia. Having finished writing the safe conduct and put his seal on it, he folds the paper, then opening his arms, he advances on Tosca to embrace her. And Scarpia says, Tosca, at last, you are mine. But his tone changes from rapture to a terrible, painful cry. Tosca has stabbed him in the heart. Ah! A curse on you! Tosca, that was Tosca's kiss. Scarpia, staggering, tries to clutch at Tosca, who recoils in terror. Scarpia yells, help! I'm dying! Help! I'm dying! And Tosca is spitting words at him. Is your blood choking you? Ah, slain by a woman? You tortured me so. Can you still hear? Speak, look at me. This is Tosca, oh Scarpia. And he falls to the floor. Help, help, Tosca. Are you choking on your blood? Die, you fiend. Die, die, die. He is dead. Now I forgive him. Ooh. Tosca's hysterical rage, finally unbottled and freely expressed, borders on sadism. Listen, her reaction to Scarpia's death is almost more disturbing than Scarpia's own actions. We expected that from Scarpia, but we didn't expect this from Tosca. We understand it in retrospect, but we didn't expect it. It's a shock, and it's quite terrifying. Then the pantomime. Without taking her eyes off Scarpia's body, she goes to the table, takes a bottle of water, dipping a napkin in it, washes the blood off her hands. Then she rearranges her hair in front of the mirror. Remembering the safe conduct, she looks for it on the desk but can't find it. She searches elsewhere and finally sees it clutched in Scarpia's already stiffening hand. She lifts his arm, then lets it fall inert after having taken the safe conduct, which she hides in her bosom. And then she utters her last words, and all Rome used to tremble before him. On the point of leaving, she changes her mind. She goes and takes two candles from the wall bracket and puts them on either side of Scarpia's head. She looks round again and sees a crucifix, takes it from the wall, and carrying it reverently, kneels down and places it on Scarpia's breast. She rises and very cautiously goes out, closing the door quietly behind her. End Act Two. Please let us go back and listen to the death of Scarpia from the moment where he says, I have kept my promise.
Io tenni la promessa.
Non ancora. Voglio un salvatondotto onde fuggir dallo stato con lui.
Partir dunque volete?
Sì, per sempre.
Si adempia il voler vostro.
Puccini died in 1924, leaving his last opera, Turandot, incomplete. Turandot, which we discussed way back in Lecture 1, is the last of the great grand operas. Like them or hate them, respect them or disrespect them, Puccini's operas exhibit a wonderful balance of words and music. His stories are dramatically compelling, and his music heightens and deepens the dramatic meaning and expressive content of these stories. The great American soprano, Rosa Poncel, who worked with Puccini, said, quote, "With Puccini, it's always drama, drama, drama," unquote. Words distilled, intensified, magnified by music, the whole always greater than the parts. We reserve the final word for Richard Strauss's last opera, Capriccio, of 1942. Capriccio takes place in a chateau outside of Paris about 1775, just at the time that Gluck's operatic reforms were stirring a storm of debate in Paris. Capriccio is an opera about opera, in particular, the relationship between words and music. In a particularly delightful scene, a poet named Olivier and a composer named Flamand and a theatric director named Laroche argue the relative merits of their respective arts. The poet says, music, and this is in an opera, I love the idea of an opera about an opera, everyone arguing about the relative merits of words and music. The poet says, music and dance are the slaves of rhythm. They have served it since the beginning of time. The composer says, there is more constraint in the restrictions of verse. The poet responds, freedom of ideas is given to poets. Who sees any boundary between content and form? The composer responds, music is in every respect more full of meaning. It ascends in spheres which you cannot invade with the mind. Olivier, the poet, responds, not in musical abstraction, but in the clearest language can I express what I am thinking. This is what your music can never achieve. The composer responds, my ideas exist as melodies, and what they mean to me is inexpressible. A single chord you can feel the whole world in. The director, Laroche, says, ah, they are fighting each other. Each claims to be more important in his art. I could spare them the trouble. In my realm, they are nothing but servants. Again, the poet puts up a fight. The poet's idea is the mirror of life. All the arts must call poetry their mother. The composer responds, but music is the root from which everything springs, and nature's voices sing all other arts to sleep. The poet says, the language of mankind alone is the soil where art can be nourished. And the composer points out, the cry of pain preceded all speech. Yes, indeed, their debate goes on and on and on, with the realization that what they're arguing about is opera. Is it words or music? Which is transcendent? Finally, the poet points out, the composer and poet, dreadfully hampered each by the other, are wasting unspeakable labor in giving birth to opera and acting as its midwives. And the count, who is present, says, every opera is in itself absurd. Let's just sample, 30 seconds or so of this wonderful scene so that you can hear what this dialogue from 1942 sounds like, and then let's draw some conclusions.
Tanz und Musik stehen im Bann des Rhythmus, ihm unterworfen seit ewiger Zeit. Deiner Verse Maß ist ein weit stärkerer Zwang. Frei schaltet in ihm des Dichters Gedanke. Wer zieht da die Grenze zwischen Form und Gehalt? In irdischer Form ein unfassbar höheres Musik. Sie erhebt sich ins Fernen, in die der Gedanke nicht dringt. Nicht in unfassbaren Klängen, in klarer Sprache form ich meine Gedanken.
It's a wonderful scene. It's a fascinating opera, and it is the endless argument when one comes to talk about the essence of opera. Is it words? Is it music? Or is it something greater than both? From a purely realistic, pragmatic point of view, opera is indeed an absurd thing. But as I believe we've experienced during this course, this strange and wonderful combination of words and music, with composer, ultimately the dramatist, delivers an emotional charge perhaps unique in all of the arts. My friends, go to operas. Buy recordings. And whatever you do, read the libretto and think about the story, the words. And then kick back and let the music, the singing, and the sheer magical beauty of the human voice intensify the word and transport you to a frankly heightened reality, a reality that words alone cannot create. Be it Italian, French, German, Russian, English, Czech, or Spanish, be it Baroque or Buffa, Wagner or Verdi, opera is an experience, a joy like no other. I wish you the very best of listening. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Tom Rollins, president of the Teaching Company. We hope you've enjoyed How to Listen to and Understand Opera with Bob Greenberg. Professor Greenberg's premise is that listening to music is an art unto itself, and that once you have learned the rudiments of that art, you can understand the language of music itself, its power, its beauty, its genius. We have produced four other courses with Professor Greenberg which carry out this same premise. How to Listen to and Understand Great Music, the Symphonies of Beethoven, Bach and the High Baroque, and Concert Masterworks. We would welcome the opportunity to provide you with these courses. Give us a call at 1-800-TEACH-12. That's 1-800-TEACH-12. The Teaching Company's premise is that we want to bring the best teachers from the best schools in the world to you so that we can share their ability to ignite the passion for learning in everyone. And we do that by holding the best seats in the house in the best classrooms in the world. We have a full catalog of courses we've produced in topics ranging from literature to the fine arts, philosophy, history, and the sciences. For a copy of that full catalog, again, give us a call at 1-800-TEACH-12. We welcome the opportunity to serve you. Thank you very much.